Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Vampire's Heir, 1. By J. David Baxter. Narrated by A. W. Miller.
Chapter 1. Worst Buffet Ever. Nate had tried to warn me. I hadn't listened, though. Maybe because Nate had always been a jerk to me when he was a kid and made fun of my name. Chapman Daniel Hurley. I had tried to ignore it. Being several years older, it shouldn't have mattered to me. Unfortunately, I never liked my name, and I was self-conscious about it, which made Nate's teenage mocking a little too effective. That may be why the guy's statement about my garnet-set bronze pendant being magical seemed like some kind of strange roundabout jab. If only I could go back now and ask the jerk what he meant and how he could have known. Ugh, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me back up and start from the beginning of this terrible night. This should have been one of the greatest nights of my life. My friend Barry and I were in Vegas, ostensibly to attend a cybersecurity conference for which my employer was footing the bill. In truth, we were there to enjoy ourselves. I had never visited Sin City before and had heard all my life how much fun it could be. Its dining was legendary, with hundreds of great restaurants and dozens owned by celebrity chefs. Then there was the gambling and the dream of hitting a rich. It might be a long shot, but I had nearly 10 grand in the bank to spend, or gamble away, thanks to that server build that Nate had commissioned a few weeks ago. He was my friend Marcy's nephew, and he seemed to have matured a lot since his teen years, but what did I care if he was willing to throw his money around like that? I would have even put up with him mocking my name the way he did as a kid, using that annoying fake British accent.
"Oi, Mr. Chapman Hurley, sir, be a good chap and fetch me a crumpet."
Never mind that we were both born and raised in Texas, and his fake accent was atrocious. I needed to put those thoughts out of my mind. The real question is how he had known my pendant was magic. I didn't believe in magic, so I ignored him. At first, he had just said, "It's pretty cool, looks magical." That hadn't been enough at the time to make me notice. Still, a minute later, he got a funny, serious look on his face and added, "Hey, be careful of that pendant. It really does look magic. Never know what something like that might do." That had been all. Nate didn't elaborate, and I had dismissed his comment then, unsure what to make of it. I mean, who believes in magic in this day and age? Well, I do now, but it's far too late for that to matter. What's done is done. Crap, I'm still getting ahead of myself and not getting to the point. The point is, I'm dead now. The magic pendant did its thing. Only, I'm still determining if I'm happy about that. I guess I should be happy. Obviously, I'm not actually dead, just undead. That was quite a shock, and I'm still getting used to it. You see, I made the mistake of interfering with a robbery and got ganked for my troubles. Barry and I had arrived in Vegas that afternoon. We had rented this little Airbnb just off the strip. It was a nice neighborhood, or so we thought at the time. The house was built in the late 70s or early 80s and had a pool in the backyard. It wasn't anything to write home about, but I couldn't argue with the price of cheap. We had settled in and unpacked and were about to head out to the casinos for dinner, planning to demolish some unsuspecting buffet and make them regret their all-you-can-eat policy. It was early, only about 8:15 or 8:30, but being the winter solstice, the sun was down and the stars and moon were out. Not that you could see many stars with the light pollution in Vegas. Even so, the moon looked particularly cool, and I couldn't help but notice that it was shaped just like my pendant. I might as well digress a bit more and describe the evil thing. I had purchased it at an estate sale in Dallas a few weeks before. Some old guy had kicked the bucket and didn't have any heirs or something. The agent at the sale had grumbled about his plane going down with his inheritors all on board, causing a mess of paperwork. I might seem a little callous, but after what happened to me tonight, I don't have a lot of sympathy for the guy. As I was saying, it was a high-end sale, not something I would typically attend, but the guy had been a client of the company I work for, so I had heard about it at the office. I found a cool-looking old pendant at the estate sale. A layer of dust coated the surface. It took a wipe down with my shirt sleeve to clean off the smudges and reveal its true luster. The metal was tarnished but aged in that wonderful patina that comes from having been handled by people's hands over centuries. The beaded patterns were raised above the surface and polished. The center stone looked like a garnet, but I couldn't be sure. It looked like a piece of costume jewelry, like something someone would wear with a Viking cosplay, vaguely Celtic with swirls, and not made of gold and fine gemstones. I could have easily sung, "One of these things is not like the others," as I looked at the items displayed on the table. All the other watches and jewelry were high-end pieces, Rolexes or gold and diamonds. Here this thing was, looking like some reject from a historical reenactor's closet. It looked cool enough for me to ask about it. I mean, really, who doesn't love ancient geeky stuff? When I asked, the agent told me she didn't know anything other than it had been found in an ornate wooden box among the old man's things.
I supposed it was just something with sentimental value he had picked up in his youth or something. Looks like Art Deco to me, but it's not gold, just bronze, and the gem is only a garnet. If someone cleaned it up, it would be worth a couple of $100. But I've got to liquidate the estate. So, if you are interested, I'll take $30.
Idiot that I was, I jumped at the chance and bought it, thinking it might be valuable since it had been owned by some old rich guy and had been part of a rather pricey collection. I took it to a local jeweler and had it looked at, but no luck. The appraiser told me it was just a costume piece, bronze and fitted with a garnet. She offered me $100 because she said it would go well with her Renaissance fair costume. She wasn't wrong. Still, rather than Art Deco, it looked like some ancient Viking or Celtic design to me. Except that it didn't look that old. If anything, after the jeweler had taken it out of the ultrasonic cleaner, it seemed almost brand new without the dirt and grime it had previously been coated with. Even so, I couldn't shake the feeling that it was ancient. Looking back, I should have taken her offer. Maybe I'd still be alive. And that brings me back to what happened tonight. We were just about to get into my old beater of a car, a 1990s Honda CRX that I had gotten as part of the deal I made with Nate for the server build. It had held up surprisingly well on the drive from Dallas, despite having over 250,000 miles on it. That was when we heard a scream from a couple houses over. It didn't sound like someone was just yelling in anger or surprise. It was a sound full of fear and desperation, the, "Oh shit, I'm about to die," kind. Barry hesitated, but I rushed to the end of the driveway to see what was happening. I was just in time to see a couple of guys shoving a big-screen TV into the back of an old van. It took me a second to analyze the scene, but it was obvious. The man screaming must have come home from an evening jog just in time to see his house being robbed and tried to stop them. Unfortunately for him, besides the two guys manhandling the TV, there was a third robber, and he had a knife. It wasn't just some switchblade or pocket knife either. It was big enough to catch the moonlight and look scary even from where I stood. Barry had caught up to me and urged,
"Just call the cops, man. Don't get involved."
Barry was smarter than me. Big-ass knife guy had grabbed the homeowner by his shirt, put his blade to the guy's throat, and was hissing something at him, probably threatening him to be quiet. Still, the jogger was too panicked to listen and kept screaming. I felt ice in my guts. Everything seemed to be happening in slow motion, while at the same time, it was all happening too fast to think. I instinctively knew Stabby McStabberton was about a second away from slashing the dude's throat. He looked almost as panicked as his victim due to the screams. The guy was going to die if someone didn't do something. I didn't need to look around again. There wasn't anyone around other than Barry and me, at least no one who could stop what was about to happen. I wanted to avoid getting involved. I really did. This week in Vegas was supposed to be a vacation to remember for the rest of my life, not because of seeing someone get killed or trying to save them. My dumb ass couldn't stand still and watch it happen without at least trying to stop it. I'd feel guilty for the rest of my life if I didn't do something. I wished Barry would do something. He was a black belt in karate. Unfortunately, I knew him too well. It was not in his nature to put himself at risk. He had trained hundreds or thousands of hours in self-defense, not so that he could get into a potentially deadly fight, but because he was afraid of conflict. It was crazy, but it was true. I respected the hell out of his IT skills, but I'd known him long enough to know he wasn't someone I could count on to have my back in a situation like this. I didn't blame him, but still, I couldn't watch someone die. I yelled as loud as I could, "Hey, let him go!" Jack the Ripper whirled around, eyes wide, realizing his worst fears had come true. All the man's screaming had drawn attention, and now there were witnesses. He quickly looked around, but saw no one other than Barry and me. He hadn't let the man go, however. One of the two guys at the truck yelled, "Let's go!" The thug with the knife shook his head.
"I can't afford to go back there. We gotta make sure these assholes don't talk. Hold on to this one while I take care of these idiots."
I had been moving toward him while that exchange had occurred. I don't know what I had hoped to accomplish, but did succeed in causing Stabby to take the knife from the throat of the guy and shove him roughly toward the accomplices. Yay, I succeeded. That thought was filled with much sarcasm and was about as dry as the desert surrounding the city. I looked around, but found nothing to defend myself with, and now instead of coming to the rescue, I needed saving. I yelled over my shoulder, "Barry, stay where you are and call 911. I halted my own advance at the same time, but it was too late. The scruffy thug charged at me with that big knife that looked like a machete now that I was closer. I swear, the damn blade was a foot and a half long, at least. I was about to turn and run when I tripped over a crack in the sidewalk and fell on my ass. Now I was really panicking and scrambled to my feet, but the guy kicked me from behind, causing me to sprawl out, scraping my hands on the concrete. I tried to roll with the fall, but the best I managed was to stumble back to my feet and turn to face him. I might die, but at least I wouldn't do it with a knife in my back. Besides, he was too close now, and I could not run without getting stabbed. I'd like to say I faced my death with dignity and put up a hell of a fight, but it didn't go down like that. When I squared off against him, he slashed at my face and cut my cheek from ear to chin. Despite the adrenaline, it still hurt like hell. Blood was streaming down my chin and neck in seconds. They say head wounds bleed a lot, and this one sure did. My would-be killer tried to take another couple of swings at me, but I miraculously dodged one, and the next hit my pendant. I should have been thankful for it deflecting the blow. It would have severed my jugular, after all, except the damn pendant chose that moment to make its own attack. In hindsight, it wasn't an attack, but that was how it felt to me then. The chain, which should have been loose enough to slip easily over my head, suddenly felt tight, like someone was using it to choke me, except the only person behind me was Barry. I could hear him screaming into his phone half a block away for the police to show up.
"Because we are being murdered, that's why. Just get them here now."
I didn't hear whatever else he said, because that was when I felt the real pain begin. There was a stabbing sensation in my throat. It felt like the two points of the crescent moon were digging into my skin, which they were. Then, instead of feeling more blood loss where the thing was piercing my neck, it felt like I was being injected with liquid fire. I don't know if you've ever had an IV or some other shot where they pump something into you, but it was like that, except filled with napalm. I don't know what happened with the burglar turned murder hobo, but he was no longer my primary concern. I was literally being choked to death while the pendant injected me with the blood of an ancient vampire. Actually, the ancient vampire, the one that started them all. I didn't know that yet, though. At that moment, all I knew was that my heart was struggling to pump liquid magma through my veins. Every inch of my body hurt more than anything I'd ever experienced, everywhere and all at the same time. Luckily, that's when I blacked out and no longer felt like I was burning alive from the inside out. Chapter 2. Dream a Little Dream. As my vision began, I found myself standing outside a circular hut of mud-daubed walls and a thatch roof surrounded by ancient trees. A woman in furs crouched over a fire, chanting words that sounded foreign to me, yet I understood their meaning perfectly. Surrounding her was a thick atmosphere of magic and dread as she painted strange symbols around her using her own blood. I wish I could say it was a fever dream and I woke up in the hospital and everything was all better, but there was no denying what I experienced. I will spare you the details, since it wouldn't translate well anyway, and I mean that literally. She was speaking to me in ancient Proto-Indo-European or something. It was some pre-Bronze Age shit, but I understood her perfectly thanks to the magic. I felt like every atom of my being was electrified by her presence as she began telling her story, a story of how thousands of years ago a powerful blood sorceress had discovered a way to defy death, becoming the first vampire. Or perhaps I should say the crazy blood sorceress turned herself into a vampire to keep from dying. Even our ancestors feared death and tried to avoid it. Queenie, that's what I'm going to call her, was a sorceress who practiced blood magic and was known even before her death as the Blood Queen. She lived in a time when cities were still new and bronze hadn't been invented yet. She powered her spells with blood because it was the most potent of all forms of magic. I'm taking Queenie's word for it. Hell, 2 minutes ago, I didn't even believe magic existed. Even in that dark, chaotic time, most considered blood sacrifice an abomination. Still, the Blood Queen had the power, both politically and magically, to do as she wished. She kept her people safe and well-fed through her magic, so they feared and respected her instead of lighting torches and gathering pitchforks. She only ever used the blood of their enemies in her magic, which she primarily spent for the benefit of her city-state. In time, however, even she could no longer sustain her own life through magic and felt the icy hand of death reaching out for her. So it was that she devised one last terrible spell. She sacrificed a victim every night for a year. At the culmination of her casting, she put to death over 1,000 of her enemies, using their blood and sacrifice to turn herself into the first vampire. She was different from all the others who came later because she did not lose her ability to do magic when she died. She built that into the design of her ritual. There was no way she would live forever and give up the thing that made her so powerful. There were rules, of course. It might be magic, but everything has limitations. Still, she understood them better than any other. Apparently, mages existed back then, and according to her, the rest of them were crap compared to what she could do with blood magic. By modern sensibilities, and even by the standards of her own day, she was considered evil. Still, no one ever accused her of being a fool. She made others into vampires over the centuries, but never passed on the ability to use magic. Her progeny had great powers and abilities beyond those of mortal men, as the legends suggest, but not magic. That she reserved for herself alone. It pissed her children off. Instead of being grateful for their immortality and supernatural gifts, they became jealous that she could do something they could not.
Time passed, and more time, and my children grew powerful, and vampires were feared across all the earth. Unfortunately, they could not be satisfied with what they had, but always wanted the secret of my great power. I refused and rebuked them, even sending many to their final deaths. Later generations grew in numbers and plotted in secret. In time, the old ways were forgotten. Even bronze tarnished and gave way to iron. In that ending was sown the seeds of my destruction. After plotting for many years, the eldest and most potent of all my descendants came together and attacked. But they, too, were cunning and knew I could never be defeated so long as I had blood. So their attack did not strike at me, but at my people. They raised an army and slaughtered the towns near my home. Not seeing the threat at first, I was slow to rise. I had known only power and dominance for millennia. I strode into the battlefield like a titan, ready to punish those who would threaten me, only to discover the mortal invaders themselves lay slain on the field, their bodies drained. Then I was attacked by legions of young vampires. I took some damage, but quickly destroyed them all. I sought to pursue the plot's leaders, but found the same everywhere. Dead villages and towns, without a drop of blood to drink, and newly made vampires all crazed with thirst. Only then did I realize the true threat I faced. Their strategy was not to do battle, but to starve and rob me of what gave me power. Perhaps the leaders thought to weaken me and force me to provide them with the secret of magic, or they simply wanted to eliminate the only one with an ability they did not possess. Regardless, their plan succeeded. After months of this running battle, with cities and even more civilizations destroyed, I was ground down, my strength all but drained. At last, as I neared the end, unable to heal any longer or sustain myself, my children drove stakes into my flesh and, with cold iron, removed my head, and with that action, they unknowingly sealed their own doom.
Queenie had the last laugh. She had held two other secrets until the end. First, she used her magic and linked their blood to hers, and with her death, the magic that sustained them lost its source and unraveled, leaving a field full of feigned corpses rather than just one. So ended the first race of vampires. The second secret she took to her grave was this amulet. Before the end, she had created an artifact to hold her essence and pass it on when it found someone worthy. Not that I feel all that worthy, but apparently dying while facing overwhelming odds during a winter solstice with a crescent moon in the sky did the trick. Or maybe it was just that I was facing death and it was nighttime. I don't know. Whatever. I'm undead now, so middle fingers to you, Queenie, for doing this to me. Although I shouldn't be ungrateful. I might be dead if it weren't for you. Sorry to get a bit flowery there. That was the way Queenie talked. It was all very grandiose and more than a little self-important. In truth, though, I was pretty impressed. She was scary as hell, and her presence made me feel like a mouse facing down a lion. That said, I am not sure Queenie killed off all the vampires when she died the way she thought she did. It wasn't a feeling I got in the vision. I'm sure she believed what she said. It's just the fact that vampires still exist in the public consciousness. There are too many stories and movies for them to have been something that only existed thousands of years ago. I don't know. Maybe some of those newly turned thirst-crazed vamps survived the battles, fled into the hills and forests, and laid low until the war was over. Or perhaps someone else figured out the secret to making vampires independently. Either way, I doubted they were all gone. That event became known as the Late Bronze Age Collapse by historians and anthropologists. Yeah, their fight to kill her literally caused the fall of so many civilizations that scientists are still puzzled to this day on what the hell happened to cause them all to die out at once.
Chapter 3. Now what? So, there I was, lying on a fake grass lawn in some Vegas suburb with Jack the Ripper and his big-ass knife standing over me. His two pals were manhandling the poor guy who started the worst evening of my life with his scream. My friend turned to run away like a little bitch, screaming into his phone for the 911 operator to please send help. After all, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away. As I opened my eyes after the vision finished, all of that was frozen in place. I blinked a few times, both overwhelmed by the sudden brightness of the night thanks to my new overly sensitive vampire eyes, and in shock at the fact that no one was moving. It was like someone had a cosmic TV remote and had hit pause. Time was stopped, and that's not just a metaphor. It was like that scene in the movie where that speedster is going so fast that it looks like everyone around him is standing completely still. Before my untimely death, I was an IT guy, so I kind of understand science. Even so, I had no idea how something like this was possible. They weren't just going slow. They weren't moving at all. Time was straight up frozen. The part of my brain that thought it understood the laws of physics was rebelling against this. It shouldn't be possible. If I really was in some kind of Planck time movement between tick and tock on the cosmic clock, then I shouldn't be able to see. The light should not be able to reach my eyes. Ugh, Queenie was really throwing me for a loop with this one. After a few minutes of walking around, getting used to my new and improved body, and poking at the thug statues, I decided it was time to stop trying to understand how magic could make physics take a time out and do something useful instead. That brought me to a halt. What was I going to do now? My old life had just ended. I could still see the spot on the ground stained with my blood where I'd fallen. As far as the world was concerned, I had just died. I was a vampire now, according to Queenie. She had told me all about what that entailed, and about the magic to which I now had access using the blood of my victims. Theoretically, if I had enough blood, I could do crazy shit like this time stop. Except I had no idea how she had done that. Even with her explanations, which were rudimentary, there is no way I could visualize how this was possible. Based on her explanation, I could make it a reality using blood magic if I could conceptualize something. Only, I couldn't wrap my head around what she had done here or how she had done it. I guess that means stopping time is out for me. That was a shame. All kinds of crazy ideas were starting to make their way into my brain on what I could do with time stopped. Unfortunately, I only had this one night. According to Queenie, however long I had until dawn was how many hours I had before I was returned to the normal flow of time. She had done it to give me a head start on my enemies. She had assumed that whatever enemies I faced would be due to them seeking the amulet. She hadn't imagined that the artifact would trigger due to some random punks trying to burgle a TV. One thing I was sure of, I couldn't go back to my old life. I have seen too many movies and TV shows where something supernatural happens, and the person's family and friends all end up getting dragged into it and dying. At this point, I had to figure wizards and vampires and who knows what else was real. I didn't want the people I cared about to suffer because of me. Besides, there were four witnesses who just saw me fall to the ground bleeding out. How was I going to explain that? I did have the desire to punch a hole right through the head of that asshole with the knife, but again, that would draw attention to the fact that something obviously supernatural had happened here, and that seemed like a bad idea. First things first. Barry wasn't exactly a close friend, and I didn't even know the jogger, but I couldn't let them get killed either, not when I could easily stop it from happening. Looking at the scene, I gave it some quick thought and settled on the simplest solution. I walked over, picked Barry up, then carried him closer to the Airbnb and carefully put him down precisely like he had been so he wouldn't trip and fall when time restarted. He would simply be closer to safety. I was amazed at my new strength. Before my untimely demise, I would have struggled to pick my friend up, much less carry him half a block. He had to weigh 200 pounds at least. Now, however, I could have done it one-handed without effort if there had been an easy way to hold him. What to do about the jogger dude? I couldn't leave him to die either. Hell, technically, I had just given my life to save his. This was going to be the biggie, though. I couldn't think of any way to save him without it looking supernatural. With Barry, they could have just blinked and missed him taking off at a sprint. That would be easy to explain, but not so much with the jogger. Maybe. I suddenly felt a shit-eating grin split my face. There was that movie with the speedster, and when he tapped someone on the forehead while going super speed, they flew backward when time returned to their perspective. What would happen if I kicked Knife Boy in the nuts? I could still manipulate matter. I had just carried Barry half a block and put him back down. If I gave these guys nut shots, I bet they would double over when time started again. With that plan in place, I first took the big-ass knife away from Choppy McChopperton.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?